This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Houston, this is the SS Salty Rocket. Are we clear for takeoff?
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have liftoff.
The following program is a show intended for an adult audience. Our discussions are of a sexual nature and may contain coarse language and references to drugs.
You're with Dean Beck on Hide and Seek.
No, you're not with Dean Beck tonight. You're with Andrew the Apprentice and Arvy.
Warbanger! Well, oh, come on!
Well, now, what was the other one you got? You did get another one.
I got Arvy the Adept.
Arvy the Adept.
No, I like Arvy Wall. Thanks, Craig. That was a good one. I mean, it was the first one, so we'll give you props for that one. But I'm more partial to being Arvy Wallbanger.
If you do have a name for Arvy, let us know. 0427 Joy 949 or email onair at joy.org.au. Keep the 1300 Joy 949 number all put into your phone and all set for tomorrow morning, the start of Radiothon 2013.
Yes, they're packing the studio tomorrow morning for apparently all the drive and all the breakfast shows are all piling in from 6:30 tomorrow morning
exactly.
With the Murphys.
It's going to be chaos. And the Joy Studios are, of course, all prettied up. The lights are flashing and we're all set to go for Radiothon. So make sure next Thursday night, you are joining Dean and myself from 9 p.m. and you phone 1300 Joy 949 next Thursday night to become a Joy member. We're going to be back with Stu Fenton and then a little bit later, Christian Vega from The Vixen Hour. You're on Joy 94.9.
Hello, this is Nath Valvo.
And I'm Reece Nicholson.
Do you know what, Reece? I love being spit roasted by two men in the Joy studio, don't you?
Same. I like watching too.
And out of all the people here at Joy that like to spit roast me and Reece at the same time, there's only two that we come back to year after year.
Do you mean Dean and Andrew? Right, okay. Yeah, I didn't know. There's a few of them.
No, Dean and Andrew. Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9. I totally forgot what the frequency was. I was like, 94.9. Try that again, sorry.
G'day everybody, this is Nath Valvo.
That's right, you're on Joy 94.9, Andrew the Apprentice and Arvy Wallbanger with you this evening. Of course, it is time for our Compassionate Counsellor.
This has me very rattled.
Can you come in here, please?
What?
This is bad, 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 bad.
I'm officially out of control.
Stop thinking with your dick.
That's all right, I'll just attribute this to your drinking problem.
I could walk out of here and boom.
You're very unique.
Free yourself from the confines of the past. Here to guide us towards the life we want to live.
God's chose well.
Our compassionate counsellor, Stu Fenton.
Good evening, Stu.
Hello, I always laugh when I hear that intro.
It's quite good, actually. I quite like that.
It's great.
I felt all relaxed.
Stu, I just saw on your website recently that you've got a bit of an event coming up in later July about connecting to the bush.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's less about the bush and more about connecting, I guess.
But what's some of the theory behind the event you're running? You say it's about getting meaning and purpose in life.
Well, that's the theme of this retreat. This is a gay men's retreat, and you know, like my idea for it actually came out of the support groups I run up here. I run two, one called Only Connect, which is a phrase from an E.M. Forster novel, which is all about how he believes, you know, people function best when they're connecting healthily with each other. And then the second group is the Velvet Rage group, and I've got some regular attendees who come to that, and they said to me, oh, we should go on a retreat and go away for a whole weekend of connecting. So I took them seriously and came up with this group. But I think the idea of it really is, you know, I think there's a very traditional way of gay men practicing intimacy or connecting, you know, which is pubs and clubs and dinners and, you know, all that sort of urban stuff. And this was, I guess, the idea around this was to go out into somewhere where there's not so much music or loudness and sort of to sit in circles and talk about meaning and purpose, because they're two themes that come up often in our groups, where when guys are a little bit, you know, finished with the gay scene as, you know, nightclubs in that sort of format, they start to look for other meaning and purpose. And I guess that's one of the themes for this retreat.
What's the benefit of really, I suppose, disconnecting from the world to be able to have a look at yourself?
Well, there was a really great phrase, I think, in the invitation that I sent out to my email list, and I think it's about learning how to just connect with gay men in an environment where it's not something we've done. I mean, like, I'm speaking from my own experience. I did a lot of my early connecting as a gay man in the nightclubs of Melbourne, actually, at Three Faces and Savage and Tasty and all those sorts of places. And I think there's a lot of value in doing that. But, you know, as I took more drugs and got wilder and wilder, you know, the connecting just became about sex. And I think probably where doing something like this differs is it's more about practicing intimacy, where sex doesn't have to be the end product, where it's, you know, their experiences and their emotions and their feelings and their, you know, past experience, identifying with one another, supporting each other is a big part of it.
So would you say that this would be almost a sex-free event, or is that, do you not prescribe or condone? I mean, how do you handle actual sex, I suppose?
Because it could be that they're all like going along expecting an orgy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that is quite interesting you say that, because when I first put the ad out, I did get a someone contact me with a very suggestive email address, which I won't repeat. and they asked, they said this was what they and their partner were very excited about. And when I sent them the details, I never heard back from them. So I think, like, to answer your question, I think, it's not. It's the first time I've run it, so I don't think it's going to be that big enough group of men that this is going to be a major issue. But, I mean, I wouldn't also go and say, no, you can't do this. But, you know, I think most of the kind of guys that I know that are coming, they're kind of guys who are more focused on the intimacy part than the sex part anyway.
So when, you know, when you're speaking about one of the things that the explanation says is externals and internals, in terms of connecting, when you're talking about externals and internals, what are you referring to in terms of finding connections?
I would say I'm talking about self-care there. So the externals would be, you know, going on a bushwalk and, you know, just talking and engaging with each other while we're walking. We're also going to be cooking meals together, you know, as a group, and so there's that sort of like working out how to cooperate and have fun and have a laugh. And, you know, I think the Saturday night meal is going to be a gratitude dinner where we'll talk about what we're grateful for, you know, as opposed to life I find sometimes can be about a little bit of complaining about what I don't have. This feast will be about, you know, talking about what we're grateful for. And the internals are a lot of other self-care stuff that you can sort of do on your own. We're going to have a meditation teacher come up and do a bit of teaching of meditation. We're going to be doing a lot of process groups where you sit and, you know, maybe there'll be a stimulus like creating a collage and then talking about the collage and how it relates to you and your life experience and your emotions. So the internals are basically thoughts and feelings, I guess, and the externals are thoughts and feelings while engaging in a process like cooking or walking or something like that.
Blokes aren't very traditionally used to doing that sort of stuff. How do you reckon they're going to go?
What's that?
Blokes aren't very used to doing that sort of stuff. How do you think they're going to go?
Well, I think I've got a big smile on my face because I find that stuff incredibly exciting. and these kind of guys that are coming find it exciting too. I mean, for me, one of the most exciting things I witness is myself, you know, feeling a lot of emotion, or the people in my groups feeling a lot of emotion, or, you know, connecting with other people. And it seems to happen fairly regularly. And that's more exciting for me these days than popping a pill on a dance floor. So I think the guys that are coming, some of them will be challenged by that, and some of them are very used to it from the groups we've already done.
So, as do you see this perhaps as a way for gay men to sort of reconnect with a sense of community outside the space of the enforced bar and club sort of scene? This is almost recreating a family environment.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think that's what I was trying to capture before when I talked about the invitation I sent out. It's sort of more about, just trying to capture a sense of family and brotherhood and fellowship. I hope that doesn't sound too cliched, but there are people that come to my groups that have never really felt like they fitted into that traditional gay scene lifestyle. And there are some people who have been plagued by addiction or schizophrenia or bipolar who, for those reasons, never felt really like they could fit in there as well. I mean, there's a whole clump of people that fit into that very well and get their needs met and feel satisfied and contented with that kind of environment. But I guess we never stop to think about there's quite a vast amount of other people who don't really connect with that way of, being with other guys. So this is an opportunity for those people, whoever they are, to try another way.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. We're speaking with Stu Fenton, our compassionate counsellor. We'll be back to chat more with him very shortly. You're on Joy 94.9.
Hi. Bored. Lonely. Looking for love. Don't get too excited. Firstly, I'm not a man and I'm actually straight. It's Catherine Devaney here. You're listening to Hide and Seek with Dean Beck and Andrew the Apprentice on Joy 94.9. Get a hard one up you, if you haven't already.
Delete addictions. Boost your self-esteem. Reconcile those relationships. Here to guide us, Stu Fenton.
You're on Joy 94.9, Hide and Seek, with Stu Fenton joining Andrew and Avi this evening. Stu, we've been talking about a bush retreat you're running later in the year, and it sounds very similar to some things that happen amongst guys, and getting guys to reconnect with masculinity is something that sort of is happening a bit more commonly, getting guys to go on retreats. Have you seen that happening as well?
You mean retreats that are specifically aimed at...
at men and reconnection to masculinity.
I have actually... someone sent me an article that was written for just any kind of men, it wasn't specifically targeted at gay men, and it talked about the benefits of that kind of stuff. I think there has been an increase in that sort of thing. Women... traditionally, I might get myself in trouble here, are always known to be quite willing to talk about their feelings and sit in groups and support each other and be gentle and all that sort of stuff. And men have, traditionally grown up being told that if they do that, that they're weak or it's not cool to be that vulnerable and whatever. And I think there has been an increase of evolving with all men where that's no longer necessarily seen as that you're not a man. Definitions of what a man is, I think, are changing and evolving, and that's just a big relief in my book.
How do you think that gay men, and I mean, it's hard to define a gay man as one thing, but gay men that you see, how do they connect to masculinity?
Well, I think this is a really interesting question because I don't know that all of them are wanting to connect with masculinity because some gay men are really, it's a little bit like the Kinsey scale, I guess. There are gay men who are hyper-masculine and then there are gay men who are hyper-effeminate.
Yeah.
And then we all fall somewhere in between. I've met gay men who are effeminate and have a huge hang-up about that and try to make themselves masculine, so there's a sort of forced masculinity there. And then there's, gay men who are really effeminate and they don't have a problem with being effeminate, so it would not make sense to try and make one of those men try and become masculine because they're quite a joy, those kind of men, to meet, because I think what they do is they break down this idea that a man has to be one particular kind of way or that they have to be masculine. And you know, like it wouldn't make sense to force a really masculine woman to be feminine as much as it would, you know, vice versa. So I think it's a kind of tricky but interesting theme.
Does it almost become now a little difficult to describe men and women as masculine and feminine?
Well, I think so. I mean, where I fit into all of this, I wouldn't even be going near that unless a client were to bring it up as an issue. I would be probably, if anything, focusing more on a person's identity and how they see themselves in the world, and they might draw on ideas of their masculinity or femininity, you know, as part of getting a sense of themselves in the world and who they are and their authenticity. But I wouldn't be leading them in that. I wouldn't be like starting a 2-hour group on my retreat and say, this is how you become more masculine.
We're going to have a drum circle and then go into the smoke tent.
Yes, exactly.
But at the same time, I suppose there is benefit in a shared masculinity, if you like, almost a shared male experience, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably getting closer to the core of it. I mean, maybe, you know, some people don't even like to be labelled gay, you know, and there's a whole range of men who, you know, would be, I'm sure, interested in coming on the retreat but might be frightened off by, you know, the way that I've even set it up. I think it's probably more about a shared sense of fellowship and sexuality that might be closer to the core of it, you know, like, and bonding, you know, like I've done counselling work with bisexual men who, you know, have presented initially as heterosexual and then disclosed their bisexuality and talked about their pain at not being accepted by ex-girlfriends when they disclose their bisexuality or being shamed by them and stuff like that. So, and I think those kind of guys fall into the, you know, more or less into the same sort of group as us and, you know, would be welcome to come along. But their issues are quite different to what a gay man's issues would be. But then again, there'd be some similarities as well.
And you know, we were talking to Brian earlier about this discrimination under the rainbow. It's also quite useful for the group to have this shared experience of what it's like to be gay, what it's like to be bi, what it's like to be a man who has sex with men but doesn't identify as gay, for example, as you were saying earlier. So it actually gives this broader understanding and acceptance of what, you know, that phrase of walk a mile in somebody else's shoes sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important issue for the gay community because, you know, at one lecture I was at this year, I just heard that the highest rate of suicide isn't amongst straight or gay men, it's amongst bisexual men. And I think it's because, you know, what I heard is that they can be shunned by their heterosexual peers, and they get shunned by gay people too, who don't accept them fully as being gay men, or they taunt them by saying, well, no, you have to choose or be gay, which I think is insane. So, you know, like I think it's a really important issue for the gay community to be really inclusive and, like you said, have enough empathy to, you know, embrace all people.
You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Stu, where can people go to find out more about this retreat you're running and everything else that you do?
On my website, if you go to stufenton.com.au, it's all on there on the services page, and you're welcome to come along.
Yes, up in Sydney.
Yes.
Or you can make a trip. Nobody minds making a trip.
No. Stu, all the best for the next few. We'll be talking to you again soon, no doubt. It is Joy's Radiothon next week, so we might have a quick chat to you next week as we do our annual Radiothon celebration.
Yeah, they're going to make you renew your membership. That's what it's for.
Great talking to you guys.
See you soon. That was Stu Fenton on Joy 94.9, Hide and Seek.
G'day everybody, this is Nath Valvo.
And I'm Reese Nicholson.
Me and Reese love group sex.
I'm dead inside.
And every time we want group sex, we come and see Dean and his apprentice Andrew on Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9, for fuck's sake.
That's right, you are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9 with Andrew the apprentice.
And Avi Warbanger. And yes, Rob. Thank you, Rob.
Rob's put his name to your name.
Yes, Rob. Rob has texted in 9 times to tell me that his name's Rob. Hello, Rob.
Hi, Rob.
And we are joined in the studio by the delectable Christian Vega.
Delectable?
I know.
Okay, yeah.
I like introducing Andrew to a new word each day. And today's word of the day is delectable.
Amazing. Everybody use it in a sentence.
Well, everybody get your mouth around it. You have come from the opening of something that's fabulous.
Yeah.
Which is?
His name wasn't. No, I came. I have just come from the launch of the Festival of Sex Work.
What is the Festival of Sex Work?
The Festival of Sex Work?
I'm glad you asked.
It's like we scripted this or something. No, the Festival of Sex Work is a celebration of the lives, the skills, the culture and the community of sex workers in Victoria. So it's the only one that happens in the country as far as I'm aware. Yes, it is. So there's a lot of sort of small community events. There's a big national conference of the National Peak Body of Sex Workers, our national association. But this is sort of unique in that it aims to engage, I guess, the broader community in a dialogue with the sex working community. And that's through things like, public forums, as well as through the arts, through a whole range of events. So the Festival of Sex Work has been sort of put together by a bunch of Victorian sex workers, and there's a series of events that's on for the next 4 days.
Yes, I'm looking at your schedule of events. It's delightful. There are both public and sex worker specific events.
That's right.
So let's start with some of the public events. Obviously, your launch was tonight. Mm-hmm. What can we look forward to over the next 3 days? So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
So tomorrow we have a sex work symposium. So recognizing that most of the time when people present research, it's never spoken of from a sex worker's perspective. And it's really important, I guess, when you're talking about sex work, to actually ask sex workers what they've experienced. Because if you sort of filter it through the lens of, you know, academia, there's always somebody else's agenda that's laid on top of that. And quite often, it's not the same as the local sex working community. So sex workers who've conducted formal research, it's their opportunity to present that research. We also understand that that's a very sort of elitist, privileged position. So integrated into the symposium is what we call the soapbox, where sex workers who feel very passionately about a subject can get up and speak for about 2 or 3 minutes on their chosen topic. And so we sort of interweave that through between formal presentations.
So is that light and shade?
Yeah, absolutely.
Would that be the both sets of speakers already selected, or is it, you know, I've been to a lot of unconferences where you sort of show up, put your name on a board and say, I'm Avi and I'm going to talk about X.
Yeah, we certainly have, we always make space for spontaneous participation, recognizing that, I guess, a lot of sex workers don't feel comfortable in front of the microphone, and quite often it's the process of watching other people engage in that process that allows them to sort of get up the courage and say something that they're really passionate about, and we want to be able to sort of accommodate for that as well.
I do love the idea, and it, you know, it is after 10:30, so I can say this, the idea of somebody playing doctor who's a doctor. And I also love the idea as well that you were saying, you know, there's some sex workers who are afraid to get up to a microphone. A lot of us will have this fear of doing sex work potentially, and that everybody is afraid of something. And you can have this, you know, I suppose one of the great things about something like the Festival of Sex Work is to almost build that community of self-empowerment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it's really easy to go on and believe stereotypes and have a whole bunch of prejudice about a whole bunch of people who you've never heard from. So it's a lot easier to do that if you can't see them as real people and have real voices. So the symposium is just one event that tries to bring out the actual voices of sex workers and provide an opportunity for the broader community to engage and listen to them.
You've also got an art show and a historical walking tour.
That's right.
Yes, I'm very annoyed that I have things on Saturday. That's on Sunday.
That's on Sunday.
Oh, good.
No, you've got something else on.
I've got something else. Oh, damn it.
I like to to call it the hungover historical walking tour because quite often that's what people are turning up
at. But I'm most intrigued about the digital storytelling film screening.
Yep.
So what's happening there?
So this is an annual event. So we've so the Vixen Collective, which is a collective of sex workers in Victoria. So it's an organisation that's made up of sex workers and nobody else, just sex workers. We engaged with a community multimedia collective. I'm saying collective a lot. And what they did was they sort of capacity built sex workers to make short films about their own lives and experience, recognizing that, you know, marginalized communities, creating an opportunity for them to speak in all different sorts of ways. So, you know, getting up in front of the microphone can be really scary. But what we do is we focus on individuals, and maybe, I guess, writing a script and putting together a short film about their lives is a much easier thing for them to do and a much clearer way for them to articulate an experience or a message that they want to send. So we trained up a whole bunch of sex workers to make short films, and during the festival we always provide an opportunity, if those filmmakers want to show their films and answer questions and talk about what that experience was like.
Because I wanted to ask about what opportunities there were for public involvement and sort of question answer sessions during the festival, because I can imagine that a large part of the festival is obviously internal to the sex worker community and growth and empowerment, but it a lot of it is also outreach
absolutely
to the broader community about what it means to be a sex worker and what it means to be interacting with sex workers. So what opportunities in these events do the public have to have sort of these questions and answers?
For sure. So that's why I guess part of our launch was a panel called Ask a Sex Worker a Question. So
what was the best question?
Oh, there were so many questions. When can I get started? Always a good question.
How much can I make is probably a
They sort of reframed that. That question sort of got asked, and it was more around, well, how do you decide on things like prices for services? Like, how do you work that out? So there were a lot of questions like that. There were a lot of questions around sort of technical things like legalities, where's the best place to work? I mean, there's a lot of questions that the general community has that they don't have the opportunity to ask them. So we thought it would be a really good chance during our festival to create an event like that.
So I've always wanted to ask the question of a sex worker generally, as somebody who might be interested in employing the services of a sex worker, what are the, I suppose, what are your top three do's and don'ts for a prospective client? What should I do? What should I not do when engaging the services of a sex worker?
Sure. So it's really hard in Victoria because we have a legalized system. And what that means is some forms of sex work are legal and some forms of sex work are non-compliant with regulation or illegal. And it's really hard to know like what the difference is. So a lot of people can say the obvious and like, you know, street-based sex work is illegal, blah, blah, blah. But things like, you know, working from your own home is legal in all other states, well, a lot of other states, most other states, except for Victoria. So that's something that people may not understand to be an illegal service. So it's hard to work out what's legal, what's not legal. But that aside, I guess things like really asking, you know, why do you want to see a sex worker? Understanding that it is a service, just like any other service. Like, so when you go to see, for example, a counsellor, you go there for a very specific need and you're accessing a service. And I think it's really helpful for not only clients but for sex workers as well if a client is very clear about, you know, what their needs are and understanding that it is a service.
So having that dialogue with the sex worker themselves about why you are employing them.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, legality and regulation always comes into terms of really big pain in the ass. Legally, nobody else can sort of negotiate the services of a sex worker. And that's really hard in the context of things like, well, two legal forms of sex work in Victoria are brothels and escort agencies. Now, when you call up an escort agency, you don't speak to the sex worker, you speak to the escort agency operator. Now, that operator can't negotiate on the sex workers' behalf around services. So what ends up happening is this sort of blind trial and error thing where a sex worker turns up and you just have to negotiate then and there.
So basically you can't pimp mm-hmm. effectively. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So details about what you want or yeah. you can't do until you can speak to their sex worker themselves. Yeah.
Which is why it's probably on that level, like if you wanted to negotiate very specific services and you have very specific needs that you're very clear about, engaging with, I guess, private workers is easier in Victoria because then you're speaking to the sex worker directly.
So you were saying it's not legal for a sex worker to work out of their own home.
That's right.
Is it legal for a sex worker to visit you in your home?
That's perfectly legal.
Okay, so I suppose if one had, and I'm going to be very...
just ask your question.
No, well, I was going to say, if one has more esoteric requirements, mm-hmm. Then possibly the recommendation is to do negotiation directly with a private sex worker
yeah.
and then invite that sex worker to your home.
Yeah.
That way you're staying within the law, both from the negotiation perspective as well as the location perspective.
Sure, absolutely.
Then, and you know, this is a controversial question. Safety of both the sex worker and the client. Mm-hmm. I'm now inviting somebody I've never met mm-hmm. who, quite frankly, a lot of us imagine is coming from one of those professions that you worry about. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? There's no malice there, but it's what are the do's and don'ts again around both client safety and sex worker safety in that, you know, in the visiting a home kind of sure. event?
Well, it's just like when you would invite anybody into your mm-hmm. own home. So whether it's a plumber or an electrician or a sex worker, you would approach it in a very, I guess, professional way. Like, you know, you don't, things like, clients expect that they can be drunk or they can be incapacitated in some sort of way. There is a level of vulnerability that is involved, I guess, if you're naked and you're with another human being. But you can still have professional boundaries and still respect somebody as a service provider in that way. It's just about being clear that this person is here for a job and, you know, all of that other stuff, you would just treat like any other stranger that you would invite into your home.
Is there a way... there's no way to ask this politely.
Oh,
is there a way to get references or referees? I mean, one of the, you know, if mm-hmm. you brought up the analogy to a plumber or electrician. Mm-hmm. If I'm hiring a plumber or electrician, I'm going to their website or I'm going to a service site that says, okay, this plumber came on time and he fixed yep. the job and he, you know, mm-hmm. how do I, as somebody who's trying to find a sex worker, find mm-hmm. Referees and references and that sort of thing. Is there a legal way? Can you rate a sex worker online, for example?
Well, there are certain, there are particular websites and particularly gay social media websites
mm-hmm.
That have sort of review sections. Mm-hmm. But I always find them a bit problematic because sex is so diverse.
And so individual.
Yeah, to each and every person that, you know, reviews can be, I don't know, misleading is not the right word, but, you know, it might not give you the absolute sense of what you're going to receive from that person.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. We are, of course, joined by the Vixen Hours, Christian. We'll be back to talk more about the Festival of Sex Work right after this.
We're the Leatherman, and you're listening to Hide and Seek on Joy.
That's right, Dandre the Apprentice and RV Wallbanger here tonight, joined by Christian. Christian...
I've decided that's going to be my drag name.
RV Wallbanger.
I think that's fantastic.
Amazing.
I've always maintained that I'm never going to do drag until I come up with a good drag name, and now...
Oh, look out.
Oh, dear.
Christian, of course, you do host the Vixen Hour Monday...
I do.
Monday evenings mm-hmm. at 11 p.m.
That's right.
We'll see if that is still going to be the case very soon. Might be at a different time. Let's have a look.
Dun, dun, dun.
Suspense. And you were saying before that the Festival for Sex Work in itself is very good at providing a platform for mm-hmm. for community members to talk about their experiences.
Mm-hmm.
How has the community reacted to your program?
The community has... sex workers are always... a little bit apprehensive
yeah.
whenever somebody sort of acts out in such a big and public way. But I guess I've been involved in... I've been a sex worker now for... for over 15 years and involved in, I guess, sex worker rights. I've never sort of naturally fit into that mold of activist, but I guess I've more grown into it, but have been very much mentored by other sex worker advocates and people who are active on those issues. And they sort of gave me a really, really good solid base around things like the language of being inclusive, of things like not perpetuating stigma or marginalization, and, you know, connecting to your peers in that way and having, I guess, embodying that community spirit. I say that flippantly, but for me, that was a really good way to actually say, hey, look, I have enough opportunity here to actually put together a radio show and not be worried that I was going to, you know, marginalize other people. I would use this opportunity to be a positive and actually provide other sex workers with the opportunity to speak, which is why every week we have a different sex worker on my show.
Because you do have that you continual stream of guests coming through the mm-hmm. door.
Yeah.
And they must be quite excited. Often, nervous, of course.
Well, I have been privileged with an amazing amount of trust from a lot of sex workers. But again, that comes from, I guess, my community-based background, where I'm going to make sure it's a safe and positive experience for them. And for sex workers, that's a very rare thing. Like, often engagements with the media has sort of served to, I guess, further perpetuate stereotypes or stigma or prejudice, whereas my show is much more focused on, I guess, having a dialogue, talking about lived experience and sharing that in a very safe way that people are prepared to.
And you know, managers here at Joy have told us that your program is now the most viewed program page on the website and it's the most podcast by the sound of it uh-huh. as well. That must be thrilling.
Absolutely.
And it must also demonstrate that there is a demand mm-hmm. for people to be able to either hear their own stories through other people telling yeah. of their own stories.
And it's amazing because sex worker organizations have contacted me asking if they could put the podcast on their resource page as links for other sex workers. So that hasn't even happened yet, and the show is being downloaded that much. So it's incredibly fulfilling to know that you know, people are out there listening. And look, that there's a number of factors. It is the only community radio program in the world that is both publicly broadcasted and available online that is 100% produced and presented by sex workers. That unique aspect
of
it.
It's unbelievable that mm-hmm. here at Joy we've got that that little program happening.
Yeah, and that's very exciting. Like, I didn't know that when we first put it together. Like, I had sort of a consciousness of, like, you know, people had tried to do it in the past, and there was limited, I guess, runs of community broadcasts that sex workers have done. And there's things like, you know, on Patpong Beach in Thailand, there's a small community broadcast there that's two sex workers, and that's talk about things like work issues and safety. But this one is the only one that's sort of speaking to a broader audience
yes.
and looking to engage the broader queer community around sex work. So, yes, it's very exciting that the community has responded in that way.
And back to the Festival of Sex Work, you said that there's going to be one of the workshops. You, as we hadn't got onto the sex worker only section yet, but you do run some workshops, and one of them mm-hmm. is a media workshop. Are you running that now? Are you the media doyen of the sex worker industry in Victoria?
I'm not the only media whore out there.
I'm so glad he said that.
There are others. No, look. My approach to media has been very, very specific. But there are other sort of workshops around things like advocacy and doing things like, you know, writing letters to editors, contributing to online media, and we'll be doing workshops around that. But what I really wanted to do was put together a workshop to talk about the Vixen Hour, what it was like, how we can do media in a safe and engaging kind of way, but also provide an opportunity for people to join the team that puts together the Vixen Hour. So that's kind of what we were doing.
Uh-huh. It might also be, you know, you were saying earlier, it must be quite a challenge to meet the legal requirements in Victoria around sex work, as well as the community broadcasting standards uh-huh. that, of course, govern what you are allowed to say on a community radio station.
Sure.
So this is not just something that you can rock up and talk into a microphone for. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of consideration that goes into how you present your stories in a way that doesn't contravene both sets. You know, usually we just have the Community Broadcasting Act. You have to take into account both sets of laws as well.
Oh, absolutely. And look, living in this state and working under such stringent regulations around what you can and can't say, for example, I can't say in my advertising that I'm Asian. I'm liable for a $5,633 fine.
That's very specific. I love that number.
It's a number of penalty points, and that's what it's calculated at. But it's ridiculous. And but knowing the level of, I guess, discriminatory regulation that's out there, that's what we've been sort of agitating against in the sex worker rights movement. So having that acute awareness of what you can and can't say.
So, out of interest, what's the rationale behind not allowing people to disclose in advertising things like race?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a rationale, or is it just somebody thought this was a good idea at some point?
I think there was this sort of politically correct thing that, you know, oh, that would just promote exotification of, you know, of individuals. And it's like, dude, you go to a Chinese restaurant, you call it a Chinese restaurant, you don't stereotype the people who work there. Like, it's the same with our service. We're all individual human beings. And in a way, it affects, I guess, sex workers of colour a lot more, because there's this presumption that if you don't say what your race or ethnicity is, you're presumed to be the dominant one, which is white.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next step, obviously, is that the first contact is going to be over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And again, late at night, you don't sound Asian.
Uh-huh. No.
Therefore, so
surprise!
absolutely right. There is this negotiation that has to occur, mm-hmm. that at some point somebody has, oh, by the way,
I
thought I should let you know.
Yeah, it's interesting, because for most sex workers, their privacy and discretion, you know, confidentiality is such a huge issue for them. But another, you know, ridiculous regulation that sex work laws sort of impose on Victorian sex workers is that we can only advertise with photos of our heads and shoulders and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this very, I guess, giving away of, our privacy isn't that highly prioritized. However, people will sort of pixelate out their photos in order to try to protect their identity. The trade-off is that, you know, maybe they can't perceive race in that way. So quite often we have to use words like, you know, exotic and tan skin. There is a loophole with the race. you can't say your race or ethnicity, but you can describe your country of origin.
Oh, that's okay. Well,
so you could say of Thai origin, for example.
Yeah, and that wouldn't be illegal. It's, again, bad laws are bad laws through and through, even to, you know, their effectiveness, efficiency. Like.
Now, obviously there are a lot of, in driving around Melbourne, we see a lot of brothels that cater with the straight female sex worker to, I'm imagining, a straight male clientele. Mm-hmm. What is the market, and what is the status of, are there gay male brothels in Melbourne?
There's one.
Okay.
And that's really unfortunate, because as imposing as sex work regulation is, things like pay rates or working conditions are only, I guess, influenced by market competition. And what I mean by that is, if you're a woman working in a brothel, and the brothel, and you don't like their working conditions, or they say, oh, we're going to take 50% of the booking fee, and you think that that's too much, you can just up and leave and go to another brothel. And so by having, I guess, 90 odd brothels, if they all sort of stick to the same standards, that's what ensures good and consistent working conditions, sure, and pay structures. Yep. If you only have one male brothel, though, nothing stops them.
No other option.
And I would have thought, I suppose there's this, it's almost that thing of, in the days now of online and the instant GPS-based apps, that requirement, I suppose, historically, that one might have had, I either have to find a sex worker, or I have to, you know, I don't have an option. Nowadays, I can go online.
Yeah.
And have you seen that? You know, you said you've been working in the industry for 15 years. What has been the impact of these sort of instant connection media type apps to your business? Am I allowed to ask that?
Yeah, no, look, it's always been there. And look, for gay male sex workers, they've had to deal with things like, you know, sex on premises venues and perceiving the competition, I guess, in terms of, you know, opportunities for sexual expression. So, I mean, it's always been there. But, you know, sex work is the most, people say it's the oldest profession, it's the most enduring profession. And it's the one that's so diverse and so resilient that we'll always find a way to work. Like, you know, and that's what sex workers do. We work with what's out there. And, sex work survived the internet. Sex work survived mobile phone apps. It'll survive into the future.
Awesome.
Festivalofsexwork.com is the website for all the information. It is running right through until Monday. Mm-hmm. And make sure you get along there. Christian, thank you so much for coming in tonight.
I have to read this, though, because if you want to get into contact with the festival organisers, I love this email address.
Organisers.
It's organisers festivalofsexwork.com. That's fantastic.
Avi and myself, Andrew, will be back to wrap up very shortly.
We're leaving that.
Yes. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Sorry, everyone. They don't let me near radio very often.
Luckily, we've got... This is Joy World. Become a member of the tourism. Okay. Hello, this is Nath Valvo, everybody's favourite gay comedian that got fired from Joy FM. What, I can't say that?
Joy FM? Hello, Joy, how long were you here for?
Okay, sorry, here we go.
About 2 hours.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is Hyde. I've got to stop. I think I'm getting fixated with the Nathan Reese.
You are.
Tags.
And they were a couple of little snippets of the IDs that they did in preparation for Radiothon 2013, which starts in... what's the time? It's 10. It's 11 o'clock now. Seven and a half hours. 6:30 tomorrow morning. Murphy's Law kicks off Radiothon 2013, where you can, if you become a Joy member on 1300JOY949, you can go into the draw to win a Suzuki Swift.
Beep, beep.
Beep, beep. I don't know if that's... We'll have to wait till the morning to see what all the Radiothon IDs are. There's a truckload of them.
Yeah, we were handling... I love the fact that everything happens during Hyde and Seek. I need to do late night shows more often because everything happens in the studio.
Well, everyone was running around doing the last minute prep.
We have a list of all the celebrities that have done Radiothon IDs, and this thing is significant. Fantastic. I can't wait to play these.
Yeah.
That's great.
And it is just an indication of how much our personalities of our community, of the broader community, support Joy 94.9 because
absolutely,
they recognise what an important service Joy 94.9 is for our GLBTI communities.
We want to thank everybody that came on tonight for Hide and Seek. Very big thanks to Brian, to Stu Fenton, our compassionate counsellor, and of course to the lovely Christian Vega.
Big thank you, guys. And of course, you can join Dean and myself next week at 9 p.m. for Radiothon 2013 show. Thank you, Avi, so much for joining me tonight.
You're welcome, Andrew. Thank you for having me.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.